No. Good morning to the audience of the 4th International Linux Audio Conference. I hope those of you who have arrived today have had a few minutes of sleep. Paul hasn't, I know for sure. For the rest of you, welcome again to the Siegerman Karlsruhe. My name is Frank Neumann, and together with Kurt Stipper and Mike Riedel, we've been doing the main work of the organization for this conference. This year, we're doing a quite short talk. The reason for this will be explained by Kurt right after me. The only word that I have to say is thanks, of course, everyone to part in the whole thing, and writing papers and doing staff preparations. A special thanks this year shall go out to those who provide, once again, our video and audio streaming, Jörn Lettingsmeier and Eric Zunicki. I never pronounced that name correctly. I know it's wrong, Eric.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Anyway, last year they have been really working their asses off to get this stuff running just in time, and those who were there might remember that the live video streaming with the DJing from Italy worked quite flawlessly at the sound night on Saturday. So to give them back just something small, as a small thank you for the work they did last year, because this year everything worked just out of the box, I heard. But anyway, we have a small present for them.
Yeah, we finished 15 minutes ago.
So we have one small present for them, and this was some idea that I think Julian came up with initially, and I just finished it. So we'd like to give this to you. And then I see you scream, Julian. Okay, so that was my part, and now I hand over to Kurt Stipper.
Okay, hello, welcome also from me. As Frank mentioned already, we will keep this short, and the main reason is all the organizational details we presented last year or during the past conference, always in this welcome speech, are now in the small printed conference program. So there's nothing to add now, just have fun, and I wish you all a big, great conference again. Thank you.
Now it's my part. As you already heard, my name is Mark, and most of the time I try to stand outside at the info desk, so if you have any questions about the conference, about the ZKM, about Karlsruhe, whatever, come and ask. I will be there, or my colleagues. Second point, I want to invite you to the concerts, because I was responsible for the concert program of the conference. I know the talks are very interesting, the workshops and even the discussions outside at the bar, but our concerts are interesting as well, and I would be happy to see you there. Thank you very much, and now I want to give the microphone to Ludger Brümmer, the head of the Institute for Music and Linguistics. Thank you.
So this is quite a fast rhythm of change of speakers. I hope you keep up with uploading and so on. I just want to mention the first thing. I want to thank the Dream Team, not the Stream Team, but the Stream Team probably as well. Frank, Götz and Mark, because they did incredible work before the beginning of the conference. You can imagine what it is to set up the proceedings. As well, I should thank the team of readers for the proceedings. It was a huge amount of work for them. I'm very happy that we all could get this together, and as well, I thank you for coming here and being part of the conference. There will be in the future, at least in the next year, quite significant change, because the next conference will take place in Berlin. There was a request from the TU Berlin to host the conference for the next year there, and we thought it's a good idea to do that, and you might be as well very interested to visit Berlin for the next year. I think this was, I hope this conference will kind of peak the last three conferences. It's the fourth conference, and you remember probably, or at least some of you probably remember the beginning of the conferences. We got more and more professional, and the level of publication and contributions is now incredibly well, and I hope that this increase in quality will continue, and as well the increase in developments and cooperations and communications. Because what became clear after the beginning of the first and second conference was that the quality of the development in, was really enhanced by the conference. The communication, last but not least, the communication between people is very, very important, and it speeds up the development. It makes it add on a better feedback for the developers. It add on a better motivation as well for the developers to put this really huge amount of work to see the people who enjoy and use the software they develop. And I think it is for all of you and for all of us a big motivation to continue the work and the development. So this was all I wanted to say. Now let me introduce Victor Lazzarini as a keynote speaker and let the conference start now.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me? Great. Well, it's a pleasure to be here this year again to the for the Linux conference, and I'd like to thank the organizing team for inviting me and also for putting up this show, which is great. I just would like to talk a little bit about things that interest me in music and free software, and might interest you as well. Okay, so that's that. Okay. Good. The Linux Revolution is a remarkable achievement of the free software movement. In about 10 years, it swept across the Unix and populated machines everywhere in the world. From our mobile phones to PDAs, to big iron clusters, we'll see the Linux kernel powering computers. In its wake, we see the spread of knowledge and information enabled by the concept of free software. As we move from one Linux system to another, not only life is made easier by the availability of the same or very similar tools, but more importantly, these are systems we can learn more about because nothing is hidden in it. In other words, there's no holding us back because of proprietary issues. Linux, however, is but a component of the great jigsaw that makes up the big free software picture. Firstly, as Richard Stallman reminds us, what we call Linux is actually the GNU Linux operating system. Funnily enough, despite being the most visible part of the system, GNU software is often not given its due, despite being the most visible part of the system. A remarkable achievement on its own as a collection of software that has on the whole replaced what we know as Unix. The GNU project is present almost everywhere you look, and far beyond Linux too. My first encounter with GNU was using a version of Emacs called Micro Emacs in an Atari ST machine. In addition to GNU Linux, a number of other free software, free operating systems exist, such as BSD. From GNU project itself, there is the exciting project of the Herd kernel, which when it finally arrives, will probably send a chill down most developers and hackers' spines. All of these systems give good choice to anyone looking to use free software, at perhaps the price of having to learn something about it before actually using it. Beyond this, there is a wealth of free and open source software for other non-free operating systems. A walk through SourceForge demonstrates how just much the concept has developed. Overall, using free software is starting to become a part of the lives of many people. Hopefully, as we'll see in the course of this talk, it will take over the world. Music systems developers have historically pledged allegiance to the idea of open source, if not free software. Computer music and free software are forever joined at the hip. The development of the music family of music programming languages, perhaps the most important genealogy of computer music programs, has effectively been free software, probably even before the concept was ever originated. It is worth for a while tracing the development of this software to demonstrate how it actually benefited from the concept of free software. The MusicM family of software originated at the Bell Telephone Laboratories from the work of Max Matthews, who wrote Music 1 in 1957 and Music 2 in 1958. These programs had been written for the IBM 704, a relatively primitive machine, and were themselves very basic, using direct synthesis triangle wave signals. They nevertheless were the first programs to generate digital audio as we know it today. Samples were dumped to a magnetic tape that could be put through a primitive digital to analog converter, and the sound was recorded onto analog tape for further performances. In fact, an earlier attempt actually happened in Australia, of all places, with the Chirac computer, which had a digitally controlled hooter that was programmed to play melodies. But this was perhaps the first digitally controlled sound device, but not digital audio as we know it. The real breakthrough came with Music 3 in 1960 for the IBM 7094. This program introduced many of the programming concepts we see in today's computer music languages. One is the unit generator, for instance, which is the synthesis building block of music programming languages. And the table cap oscillator, which is the workhorse of digital synthesis. Music 3 paved the way for the development of computer music and was a formidable achievement. A number of composers and researchers were attracted by Matthew's ideas and joined in the work. Then you have Tenney, Howe, Winnon, and Randall, among others. In 1962, Music 4 was created, providing the basic model for the whole series of derivatives. Written mostly in assembly for the IBM 7094, this was then passed on from Bell Labs to Princeton University, where a new version, 4B, was created for the same computer model. Other centers became interested in software, so four truncated versions appeared, Music 4F and Music 4DF, as you can see there. It is unclear as to what degree all of these programs were free software, but at least their source code seemed to be open, as they were distributed among a number of research centers and spawned a whole series of variations and a family tree of software. Now, these are the computers that you can see these programs run. So they fill the whole room, more than one room, probably. I'll play a little bit of music from, Now, a lot of you, many of you will already know this. This is now, this first one, many of you already know, just say what it was. It was actually done with the IBM 7094, and it's music for accompaniment to vocoder-based digital voice synthesis.
Sweet apostle.
actually was the origin of a famous scene in the 2001 film, or book and then the film. So where the computer sings this when he's dying. Okay, now direct descendants from these programs will include, well, for music 4, then you have a number of them. You have music 4B and 4BF. Then you have, in Stanford University, you have music 6, music 10. Then Bell Labs created music 5, for which customized versions were developed and used in many other places around the world. In fact, this music 5 was used throughout the 70s and early 80s, actually, at Durham and, well, you know, in other places. Then you have, at MIT, you have music 360, music 11, which then eventually led into C-Sound. And Music 5 also was the basis for C-Music at San Diego. So from this family tree, we have also indirect descendants on the form of widely used systems such as RTC Mix, CLM, and adopted children such as Pure Data and Super Collider. None of this development would have happened if proprietary constraints had been put in this work from the beginning. Generations of computer music researchers and composers have learned from the availability of this software in binary and source code forms, developing their skills, using and improving them. It is interesting that, although intrinsically free, most of these software systems were built on top of proprietary systems until the availability of free operating systems, effectively with Linux and GNU software. In the early 90s, many of these big computer music packages were available as source code for FTP download, sometimes covered by confusing licenses, such as C-Sound and the MIT license. More about this later. Sometimes without any license whatsoever. As a postgraduate student at the University of Nottingham in 1993, I had heard of these and was willing to spend some of my spare time doing something with them. I managed to get from cecilia.media.mit.edu the source code for C-Sound, which after some makefile fiddling, I built on a MIPS machine running AT&T Unix. The trouble was the machine did not have any means of playing out. In fact, I didn't know, not even know where it was located physically. My use of C-Sound was restricted to reading the printed out messages and checking for clipping errors, etc., and then running the same thing, the same C-Sound code on a much, much slower Atari ST machine. Then I got access to some workstations without, so I rebuilt C-Sound on them and was able to use it there. With this success, then, I tried to do the same with CMix and Common Music with mixed results. The thing is that a lot of was learned in the process, and as a result of this package being available as free software, I was able to learn a lot, and many people did the same as well. That's the IBM 360 where the 360 music transistor was running, and then this is the PTP11. That was a breakthrough actually, because it's an affordable mini computer, and music 11 was running on this, and this was actually the system that was used in many places throughout the sort of late 70s and 80s. It's a great little system. Okay. An interesting initiative that perhaps did not qualify as free. That is another slide. Yeah. An interesting initiative that perhaps did not qualify as free or open source software, although these terms were not in current use then, and perhaps will never describe it very well, was seen in the early days of the Composer's Desktop project. Developed in a number of universities and in the UK, CDP tried to put together an affordable system for computer music. In the early 90s, most of the source code was available for its users to adapt, modify, and experiment with. The whole principle of cooperative composers developing for an affordable platform was very reminiscent of what goes on in much larger scale within the Linux community now. The affordable platform in around 1990 was the Atari ST, One of its attractions was that it had a built-in MIDI interface. The CTP group was, however, thinking much beyond MIDI, and in fact, the fact that it had the Atari had MIDI became of little importance in the system. The major problem was how to get audio in and out of the machine. And one of the more electronics-minded members, Dave Mullen, developed the so-called sound streamer, which was an in-between bit of hardware that connected the Atari games port to a Sony PCM encoder decoder. The Sony PCM was actually designed for use with Betamax machines for digital audio recording, and it was in fact one of the first such commercial systems. So in terms of hardware, the system was capable of playing and recording audio, as well as writing and reading to Betamax tapes. With a grant from the Gulbenkian Foundation and support from some UK university, software was written and ported to the system. Now, the software included C Music, C Sound, the Groucho manipulation package, a graphical additive synthesis program, a graphical desktop, a command line interpreter, and developers' tools such as Emacs and Make. Another important bit of the system was the sound filing system, which was complete with an API. And this enabled large files to be written to disk, something that the Atari operating system did not provide. In later years, the system moved out to a PC Windows platform and became more proprietary, losing its initial cooperative status. I have myself benefited enormously from using the CDP platform. It was quite irritating in the beginning to spend 3 days for a particular processing run to finish, and then see some mistakes in it. But it was a great educational experience. Well, in fact, as CSUN was concerned, I had Unix testing workaround mentioned, so things were not too bad. Now, since music departments generally could not afford expensive Unix machines with audio hardware, the Atari CTP box was a way into computer music for people like me. Having bits of development software, source code, and time to look into these things was a good didactic combination. This account of the early days of CDP perhaps demonstrates how free software not only benefits the community of users, but also the software itself. The larger its user base and developer community, the more it will thrive in software pool. Another good illustration of this principle is CSound. Although for many years based on 70s code design concepts and using assembly-like orchestra language, it grew to become one of the most used music programming languages. This was largely due to its availability, perhaps as much to do as with the existence of documentation, its performance, and the fact that it was extendable. CSound was one of the first music software to become fully available for FTP download when it was released in 1986. As discussed above, many individuals around the world, myself included, picked it up to mess around with it. Thanks largely to John Fitch's work on organizing the source code into the canonical CSound, the software became the largest system around in terms of its unit generator collection and, of course, its UGMs, etc. This was the effort of a large developer community, which is evident when we look at the credit list with over 30 names on it. As with this type of effort, people have come and gone, and the development has occurred in bursts and splits. A number of flavors of CSound respond, somewhat repeating the fate of the music and family tree. Some of these survived, some died, but development nevertheless went forward and things got changed and improved as needed. I would just like to quote now Richard Dobson, who said in 1999 something very interesting about CSound and CMusic, comparing the fates of CSound and CMusic. He says, "I suppose one significant difference between CMusic and CSound, which might explain the relative lack of modern, of course, in the former, is that while CMusic has largely remained the property and product of Richard Moore, CSound has reaped the benefit of a large, skillful, enthusiastic, and mostly unrestrained, map-wide user and development group. This is partly thanks to the prodigious work of John Fitch, just about keeping everyone and everything coordinated, but partly also due to the fact that this C sound is still essentially standard C, such that anybody can have a go, including myself, on just about any platform, including the Atari ST, without having to climb a fierce learning curve of object orientation, STL, multithreading, YAGLEX, etc. Now, the licensing issue was a question that took a while to be solved. CSound was originally released under the MIT license, which in the view of many people in the community was problematic and confusing. CSound was then moved to GPL and immediately after moved again to DLGPL, which was seen as less restrictive. One of the major issues was the fact that many of us did not really understand the fuss about licenses. For some like me,